Hello everyone, welcome to a very, very, very special episode of Retro Rewatch. That's the show where we usually watch, rewatch retro TV shows that I love and Jeff has not seen before. But today, this is the 100th episode of Retro Rewatch, and we thought we would do something very, very special. And before we introduce Jeff, let's introduce our special guest for today, because I have someone here. I mean, we all know Jeff, so who knows?
Yeah,
it's totally fine. But I have a very special guest. I know him through InSpace. We've met, I want to say about a year ago. But Ray is, I have Ray Wexel with me. You're a electronics engineer, right? 40-ish years?
That's right.
Satellite communications, flight systems, I remember. You're a licensed pilot, flight instructor, glider enthusiast, tech enthusiast. You've been on TWiT this week in tech. I think you had I saw Maxwell's House. You had your own show.
That's right.
And the reason why, part of the reason why we're talking today is you personally knew Dennis Davis, aka General Hammond, and you also spent time on the SG-1 set. So thank you so much for your time, for being with us, and Ray, hi.
Happy to be here.
I'm just happy to have you.
Ray, I'm happy you're here too. And then after everything Patrice has told me about you, it's great to actually get to meet. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I've been building you up a little bit. Yeah, but if you can't tell, I'm very, very excited about you being here. I mean, we talk every Friday about flying and piloting, and you have always so much information, but also such great stories to tell. So it was kind of an obvious choice to say, okay, for a special episode, Stargate SG-1 themed especially, we have to have you here. So, let's maybe before we dive into your SG-1 story, like with your background, how did you even end up in the in tech in general?
A lot of it had to do with my father. Our family ran a grocery business. We had two supermarkets, a locker plant, and a slaughterhouse. And my father ran the meat department in the supermarket, but he also did all the maintenance on everything in the stores and locker plant. He did refrigeration. He did air conditioning. He did electrical, he did plumbing, you name it. And that's what we did on his, he worked 6 days a week in the family business. And on his day off, we repaired things at the family business.
Yeah,
instead of working in the meat department.
I don't understand what day off means.
Yeah, exactly. any rate, at 10 years old, I had a little allowance up to that point. I think it was $1 a week. And that ended, and I went to work at the store, sacking groceries and stocking shelves at 25 cents an hour. But I worked alongside my dad on all these technical things, and he read to me. He got me a library card. And we would check out books, and we read the American Radio Relay League Handbook, which is a ham radio Bible, and we read Elements of Radio, and I learned what a superheterodyne was, and we worked on this together, and I eventually became a ham radio operator first, and later on my dad got his ham license. So that's how I was led into techie things. Loved science in high school and grade school, you name it. Built kits as a kid. I built night kits and Heath kits and all that sort of thing. So that's how I became a techie.
Yeah.
And,
So I mean, and that led to your career and like to your interest in flying, because I mean, there's a lot of technology involved with that and like all of that. Did that also like, are you like, one thing I don't know about you is, are you even into science, into sci-fi usually, or is that more not usually your thing?
Oh, yes. Yes, I enjoy sci-fi a lot. I have a friend, I have two friends who write sci-fi.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, one friend that I went to college with, but now lives here in Vancouver, and we've been friends since college, and his name is Guy Imaga, and he just published a book about 2 years ago, and now I'm going to go up on it, but the book club on InSpace, where I met you, Patrice.
Yeah.
We read the book, and he appeared as a guest on InSpace.
Wow, that is cool.
And stuff. And then the other person, now I'm going to, my brain's going to go to mush.
Of course, on the spot.
Yeah, is Spider Robinson. I don't know whether you've run across him or not. He has written many books.
Yeah.
And, lives on Bowen Island near Vancouver here. And he's also a friend and stuff. So yeah. I'm into sci-fi. And of course the book club on InSpace is aimed at sci-fi only.
Yeah.
So
yeah, exactly. I mean that I know. Like you've read a lot of like Murderbot, for example, I saw like stuff like that. But yeah, a lot of sci-fi. Yeah, which is something I wasn't sure, like if you're really into it or if it's just like a, let's say, side thing here or there. Did you ever, like, when did you discover Stargate SG-1? Was it something that you more through Donna Stavis knew, or was it more like a...
Well, let me tell you my connection to Don, because Don was raised in Aurora, Missouri, and I was raised in a little town north of him in Nevada, Missouri, 100 miles south of Kansas City. And our football teams were rivals. and I did not play football, but I went with the radio station as a technical assistant and broadcast all the games.
Ooh.
But Don was on the football team, and he ended up marrying a woman who I went to high school with. We were in some plays together. We were in Oklahoma, and I played Andrew Carnes and sang a solo, and she played my daughter, Ado Annie, in Oklahoma, if you're familiar with that play. Any rate, she ended up marrying Don Davis, and many years later, after I was living in Vancouver, I was back visiting in Nevada, and some friends of mine said, "Say, do you ever get in touch with Don Davis and his wife?" And I said, "What?" And they said, they're living in Vancouver. He's a professor at the University of British Columbia. And so when I got back to Vancouver, I looked them up, and that's how we connected and became good friends. Nice. And Don is quite an artist. He works in a lot of different medias, did. He worked in everything from acrylics to oil, pen and ink, and as well as pencil. And he was a wood carver. And so I ended up reproducing some of his artwork for him digitally. And he originally was going to have a group here in Vancouver that has an etchings press. Reproduce his pen and ink drawings. And it was going to cost $5,000 an edition to set up and do a run from an etchings press. Now, turns out an etchings press is only good for 200 pulls, and then the plate is worn out. And I said, and he had to put out $5,000 up front. And if he didn't sell the 200, you know, he could be in the hole.
Yeah.
So I told him, I said, "Look, I can," at the time I had a Hasselblad with a Leaf digital back, and I said, "I will shoot your artwork and produce the proper digital files. And then I have a high-end inkjet printer that I can print your work on.
Uh-huh.
And let me do that and show you how it looks. So I did, and he loved it.
Uh-huh.
And he said, set me up. So I set him up with a computer, a printer. I prepared the files. And then he could make prints on demand.
Oh, that's
so cool. he didn't have to commit.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, to 200, you know,
yeah.
at a time. And
yeah.
that and he loved it that way. So
yeah.
that's one of the projects we worked on. We worked mm-hmm. on many more.
Yeah.
But you know, I found out that he had left University of British. By the way, he mm-hmm. has a PhD
yeah.
in set design. Yeah, in theater.
Yeah.
And I'm on his website and I'm looking at his stage design images right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
He got a bachelor's in theater and art, and a master's in, as he said, theater, stage design. So it's really cool.
He just keeps getting cooler all the time.
Exactly. Also, he was a U.S. Army captain before, so he had a military career before
he
had an on-screen military career.
Right. He was based in Korea during the mm-hmm. Vietnam War. Interesting.
Interesting.
But, yeah.
I guess he didn't get the memo.
Or maybe
maybe he did.
Maybe so. Any rate, we worked on many art projects together. I'm reproducing mm-hmm. his artwork and that sort of thing. And that's how we became very good friends. Mm-hmm. And he had a PhD in theater and set design, and mm-hmm. he always called himself a super carpenter.
I mean, I can see that, yeah.
And by the way, he always said, my epitaph should read, he was good with his hands.
Which he was.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he was, because if you go up to my living room right now, there's some woodwork mm-hmm. in our bay window that he did.
Wow.
And it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And stuff. He was an excellent woodworker and super mm-hmm. carpenter.
You would not, that's like so seeing cool. him on screen, you would have not guessed that.
Yeah.
No, yeah. But you know, he comes across as this really, really like genuinely nice, likable person.
Uh-huh.
And yes, I get it. When you're acting, you act the way the character's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just get this vibe about the person portraying the role.
Yeah.
And the vibe that I get from Don is that he was just a genuinely nice guy that I have missed out on something important because I never got to meet him.
Right. Well, he was. He and I got on famously and always had a good time together. But I'll tell you a little secret. He had a temper.
Ooh, okay.
and he was very tolerant and very nice, very uh-huh. outgoing. But if you crossed a certain line, boom. Now, he never, ever lost his temper with me. But I have seen him lose his temper with one or two other people. But
he really was.
Yeah, he was a really nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was, and went out of his way. Especially, he was wonderful with audience members, and he would go to these conventions, Stargate mm-hmm. conventions and stuff, and he was really great with the crowds and stuff like that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean,
that's really nice.
I've told you a little bit, Jeff, about like little behind-the-scenes things, and like the sense I got was like that on set, like everybody liked him, and like everybody liked
with him,
and mm-hmm. he was kind of the dad of the crew at some point. So, how, like, going from art and design, and I mean, he started acting, I think, at some point, like in the late 80s, I want to say.
Yeah, when he was at UBC, he got really fed up with the politics
mm-hmm.
In the academic world.
Yeah.
And he actually started out doing stunt work.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember the MacGyver series.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Remember him in MacGyver. Yes.
Okay. MacGyver's right-hand man, I can't remember his name now, but he was a heavy-set bald fellow mm-hmm. that looked a lot like Don. Well, Don did all the stunt double work for him. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's how he that's how he met Richard Dean Anderson.
Yeah. I mean, that much we knew. Mm-hmm. Dana Eckler was Pete Thornton,
yes.
the character.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Okay, he was that makes total sense. Yeah.
That's how he got started as his stunt double.
Yeah. I mean, he had also like an on-screen role, I remember. Like
he was
transition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
From what he was doing to, and now I'm a stuntman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And because of his football background, he knew how to roll and mm-hmm. dive and tumble and, you know, not kill himself. And the opening scene where in MacGyver, where there's a big explosion and the two of them run out, that's Don.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But you have to understand, he really was a... eventually became a well-known character actor. And if you look at his filmography and TV roles, he's mm-hmm. been in over 100 movies and stuff. One of the biggest movies he was in.
Yeah.
He was in League of Their Own. He was the opposing coach in the final game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I can tell you stories from that set, but maybe I shouldn't. any rate.
And I do remember him from Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And by the way, let me just tell you this. His opinion, he said that, you know, you would think that the director of Twin Peaks did a razor head and all these crazy things.
David Lynch.
David Lynch.
Yes.
You said so you would think.
It took me a second for my brain to click, too.
he said you would think from his work that he was an absolute madman or something, mm-hmm. but he said if you got to know him, he was a very nice, very wonderful guy to work with, and very gentle and soft-spoken and not crazy at all.
Mm-hmm.
So the other person he enjoyed working with was Martin Sheen.
He did
a number of movies with him and had held him in high regard. I won't tell you what he thought of Charlie Sheen, but that's another story.
I think we all know.
Yes. Yeah.
Don was in one movie and Charlie was thrown out of the movie midway.
Ooh. Okay.
Anyway.
I'm not surprised.
Charlie had a lot of... issues going on.
Yeah.
But
I'll tell you another well-known actor. Don was in Hook
mm-hmm.
and was also in a movie called Hero, which starred Dustin Hoffman. And he was in Hook first and met Dustin Hoffman.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did Hero, which wasn't a big movie, but it was Dustin Hoffman, and the casting director had cast his parole officer in Hero.
Mm-hmm.
Dustin Hoffman played a crook, but a heroic crook.
Yeah.
At any rate, and he went on set with this guy playing his parole officer. And he just said, came off the set to the director and he said, the chemistry just isn't there. I don't know where you got this guy, but he's just all wrong. And the director said, well, do you know somebody that could play this part? And he said, yeah, there's a guy in Vancouver, Don S. Davis. He'd be perfect for this role.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dustin Hoffman, Don was very proud of that Dustin Hoffman asked for him to be in this movie. And so they called his manager and they were able to arrange it and he flew down and was in the movie.
Yeah. That was nice. Super cool. Just looked it up. 1992. So
yeah,
quite a long time ago.
Right.
Super interesting. Right. He was also in Columbo, A Bird in the Hand. Like, just so many interesting things he did, like, over the
right.
years.
X-Files?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he was, X-Files. You know, he told me, he said, now, to be a successful character actor,
mm-hmm.
you have to know your lines. And by the way, he had a photographic memory. He could
that
memorize
helps.
Lines faster than anybody I've ever
that
met.
Helps. Yeah.
And I only, on the set of Stargate, I only saw him go up on a line one time.
Mm-hmm.
And in all of the times I was there, and I saw many of the other actors go up on their
yes.
lines more times than that. But at any rate, he said, all you have to do is know your lines. Know everybody else's lines if
yeah,
you have
that's
to
more
help
important.
Them, you
yeah.
know,
mm-hmm.
And don't be a prima donna.
Yes.
He said, be easy to get along with. He said, that's the secret to being a successful character mm-hmm. actor.
That seems like excellent advice.
Yeah, it yeah, definitely
I,
is.
I think I'm adopting that as just life advice now.
Right.
Well, Jeff, know your lines. Don't be a prima donna. I'll remind you next time we talk.
Yeah. Make sure to remind me to not be a prima donna.
No, you're not. I'm kidding, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Super interesting. Yeah. So basically, yeah. I mean, Don had said such an interesting career. Like just seeing like all the different things he did. I did not know that he was a stunt double on MacGyver. It still fascinates me. Yeah, but I mean, that's the connection to Richard Dean Anderson at the end, right?
Yeah, that's,
actually,
that's
a
how
lot
I
of,
met Richard Dean Anderson.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is actually, like, if you go through Stargate, and especially the beginning, there's a lot of connections to MacGyver, mm-hmm. because, like, yeah, that was kind of the show that where they wanted to capture the audience from,
right.
So they pulled in all the people and all the stops and yeah, Richard
right.
Dean Anderson, especially.
Now, when he started that series, it was shot at the Dominion Studios here in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it just so happened that where I worked for a company called Creo,
mm-hmm.
which was about five blocks from Dominion Studios,
wow.
very close by.
Yeah.
And so when he was in Stargate, he said, Ray, anytime you want to come to the set and watch what's happening, you know, you
mm-hmm.
get a minute to spare, come
yeah.
on over. And he gave my name to the guard at the gate of Dominion Studios, and I could go over anytime. Hi, I'm Ray Maxwell. And go walk right in.
Yeah.
And the first time I went there, he, of course, introduced me to all the cast and
mm-hmm.
the crew. And usually what I did was, I'm a techie.
Mm-hmm.
So I would usually sit with the sound man
yeah.
or the
yeah,
director
course.
Of photography
yes.
or what have you and visit with them between
yeah.
takes if,
yeah.
you know, where there was a lull and so forth. And, but I met the whole crew, you
yeah.
know, and I can tell you some funny stories there.
Yeah, we'll get to that. So the first time you met the cast and the crew, like what were your first impressions?
Very, very, well, first of all, I think they all liked Don.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, okay.
and enjoyed him and working
yeah.
with him. And they were very outgoing with
mm-hmm.
me and very friendly and said, you know, I sat down next to Greenberg,
mm-hmm.
You know, the co-owner with,
yeah. Yeah.
And we visited a while and he was very outgoing and friendly and,
mm-hmm.
told me about some of his latest ski trips to Europe.
Nice.
And whatnot. And, but the whole crew was very friendly, outgoing
mm-hmm.
to me. And, I really enjoyed it. Now I was really interested in how they did things technically.
Yeah, the technical side.
And,
yeah.
I will never forget, they had some kind of contest and they brought some, you know, some fans on
mm-hmm.
the set
mm-hmm.
and they gave them various merch and, you know, jackets
yeah.
and things and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were able to stand there on the set and watch, you know,
mm-hmm.
them shoot. And I think you have to understand when they shoot, let's say there's five people on set.
Mm-hmm.
They shoot with two cameras. that are, they start out with two cover shots.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then they will redo the scene and they'll do close-ups yep. with each person in the scene. And so you'll hear the same lines, five, six. And if anybody goes up on a line or it isn't quite right or, you may hear the same lines 10 times.
Yeah.
And that's normal on set.
Yeah.
If you're interested in that procedure, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to follow the drift of this particular episode, good luck.
Good luck. Yeah.
Because it isn't always shot in sequence.
Exactly.
Either, you know?
I just wanted to mention that. Yeah, I mean, it's actually rare that things get shot exactly in sequence. So, like, you might get the tail end of it, and then, like, the second day it gets, like, outside shoot and whatever.
Right. Yeah. I remember...
that are in the same room.
Yeah.
On the set, there's the makeup people, the lighting mm-hmm. people, the electricians, the director of photography, you know, all... It's a big crew.
Yeah.
And in between every shot, the big time consumer was resetting lights mm-hmm. for the close-ups and stuff.
Yep.
And of course they had comfortable classic director chairs for everybody.
Yeah.
Yep. And mm-hmm. They would sit. And the one of the funny things I found is Richard Dean Anderson. He was a personality.
I can
imagine.
Between takes, he would oftentimes cut up and uh-huh. and act funny or take on some persona that wasn't his, and entertain the cast. And particularly, he would cut up with Christopher Judge.
Yes, we knew that.
Okay.
He did it on screen as well. Like, that was kind of one of the things.
and then they would say places. And it was like flipping a switch.
Mm-hmm.
He would instantly go into the character.
Mm-hmm.
And I got such a bang out of, he would be cutting up and being a totally different persona. And then, bang, the switch would flip and into character, and we would do the scene.
Straight
and,
good actor, right?
Yeah.
That's what you do.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Some actors do that, Yeah, I mean, as I said, I mean, that kind of bled into the show and into the episodes, because, I mean, him and Christopher Judge, like, that was kind of the pairing we saw a lot. And then also, we get a ton of funny lines throughout, like, basically every episode. There's always a bunch of funny lines. And I know some of them were written and some of them were completely ad-libbed, or he would just make them up on the spot. Mm-hmm. Like, some of the funniest moments were not planned. Like...
That's right. And then I can tell you some that weren't on camera. let me tell you about one.
Yeah.
Let me tell you one that I was present when it happened. First of all, you have to understand that they had, I think, five directors for the series. And one of them was Peter DeLuise. That's Dom DeLuise's son.
Yes. Yeah. Our favorite.
And, okay.
It's one of our favorites.
Nice guy, by the way. I enjoyed him. Yeah. At any rate, he was directing this particular mm-hmm. day, and there was a scene where Tilk was in a hospital bed and he was comatose.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And
that could be almost any episode.
Exactly.
I'm with you.
and the rest of the people were gathered, Don mm-hmm. and Richard Dean Anderson and, the rest of the crew were gathered, about five people gathered mm-hmm. around the bed, and they have the lines, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an unusually long scene. I mean, typical scenes are only a minute or two.
Yeah.
And this one was more like 3 minutes or something. Mm-hmm. And they all had lines, and, they went through these lines. And anyway, they were going through this long scene with a particular setup and everything. I remember Tilk is
just
lying there comatose,
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they get right to the last line of the scene, and Christopher Judge lets a giant fart. And Peter DeLuise turned the air blue.
Chris, I'm good at curing your neck.
and they all die for cover. You know, it was hilarious, but I will never forget that because it was one of the, you know, he was dying. You know, it was this real serious scene where everybody's. Worried looks and everything, and then Lee lets this thing rip right at the end, and Peter just,
you know, Peter came on in character. That's a thing that happens on your deathbed.
Okay. I wanted to say it's the exposition deathbed because that we saw a lot, like exposition, like at either in the exposition, we call them the exposition room, the meeting room, or sometimes in the infirmary.
Mm-hmm. So, right, yeah. right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was, there were some interesting times on set, but that's one scene I will never, ever forget.
Yeah.
I'm sure no one on set that day will forget that.
No,
I think that's so. Right. It's probably on the list somewhere. Did you interact with any of the other directors, or was it mostly Peter that we said you saw?
It was mostly Peter that I let me put it this way: in my memory, he was the most memorable person, and I visited with him at the celebration of life for Dawn for quite a while. He came over and we visited and caught up with each other. There at one point, Dawn had introduced the producers and stuff to Spider Robinson, my other friend, who's a science fiction writer, because Dawn was a big fan of spiders and wanted them to do to write a screenplay based on one of his novels.
Yeah.
And I think the novel that he wanted them to do was Lady Slings the Blues, which is by Spider Robinson. And at any rate, Don was a fan of spiders, and I had introduced Spider to Don. And any rate, Don was trying to get Peter and some of the other people interested in doing it. It never happened, but
too bad. Yeah,
but not for lack of trying.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, one of the other directors was Martin Wood, like that we saw a lot. I think that was kind of the second. Mm-hmm. Like Peter DeLuise, I think, did throughout the show most episodes, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I think Martin Wood was the closest second.
Right.
Yeah. And then, I mean, of course, we just recently had... the time Michael Shanks, the one time Michael Shanks actually did, like, directed an episode. Mm-hmm. He never did it
turned
again.
Out to be an incredibly
hard,
technical, difficult episode to direct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, super interesting. So we've talked a little bit about Richard Dean Anderson, like, cracking up. I think that totally tracks. What about, like, Michael, let's talk about Michael Shanks. I found him always a little bit of an interesting personality, like, as an actor. What was your sense, like, on the set when you met him?
He was more of a quiet person on set.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, when, you know, action was called, he was there and acting and did a wonderful job.
Yeah, he did.
But he wasn't as chatty as some of the others that were on set and so forth. Mm-hmm. I know he at the celebration of life for Don, he was quite moved. He really liked Don and stuff. But on set, he was a quieter person and stuff. Yeah. And I did visit with him a little bit from time to time, but I wouldn't say as much as some of the others.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of tracks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My impression is that if you're on set with these people between takes, that your description of Richard Dean Anderson just being, like the class clown, but then boom, he's in character.
Yeah.
I mean, that totally believable. I picture Christopher Judge just being incredibly funny when the camera's not rolling, and apparently sometimes when it is.
Yes.
And Michael Shanks being more quiet between takes. Mm-hmm. I can believe that. And then I picture Amanda Tapping being just this really nice person, easy to talk with, occasionally has some funny story to tell you, but just like the kind of person you just want to hang out with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very nice person. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's just a pity it took so long for them to figure out how to write for her, but yeah. We had a struggle with that a little bit. I mean, Christopher Judge as well, to be fair. Like, it's we're still at the point where we're like, okay, when is Christopher Judge going to have an actual storyline?
Right now for me in the series, the consolation that I have for Teal'c is that at least Christopher Judge has a steady paycheck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because I don't feel like there's that much for him to do. Yeah. And my hope is that that as the series progresses, they finally realize how to use that character, and we get some more interesting Teal'c stories.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
right. Background. Where did he come from, and so forth? Yeah, no, I know what you're saying.
I do like that we did get a little bit more of Dawn as we've gotten up through season 4. So he's not just the guy that's giving orders in
gives
front
the
of
order
the
Stargate,
or in the from his office, whatever.
Yeah,
and we've gotten to see a little bit more.
Yeah,
and I feel like we are missing out because we're not getting to see Dawn and Christopher do more because they both strike me as really cool people that are really good at what they do and they should be utilized more.
Exactly. Who else?
Well, there's storylines that do develop their background and so forth more in the series. Yeah,
they do. And Jeff doesn't know that yet.
I'm glad to hear that. Don't elaborate.
Right. Yes, we'll not
okay,
talk about that.
I won't.
Yes.
I won't. Well, I'll tell you this much. Don used told me once, he used to tease the rest of the cast that, you know, the rest of the cast would be sent to another planet or whatever. And around Vancouver, it rained a lot and it could be cold in the winter. And they were set out and they had to walk into lakes and out of lakes and, you know, all this. And he said, and I sit here at the Stargate and tell you guys to go, I collect my check and I don't have to suffer. He very rarely went on the location. Yes. He did. There were episodes where he's on location.
We've seen a couple of those.
We've seen a couple, but it's super rare. Yes.
But it's
and
rare.
The others, and I mean, it's a running gig for us. Like every planet looks like some forest in the BC area, more the Vancouver area.
So that they'll be running along, and someone will jump over a tree that's down, and I recognize that tree.
You're like, oh,
I
that's
know
that tree.
That tree.
Yeah. Well, of course, those of us locals recognize a lot of location shots. They use Simon Fraser University, which is all concrete. They used it a lot. By the way, the sets were at Dominion Studios were incredible. And of course, the main one is the Stargate, and stuff. Yeah. But all those tunnels and all those other things, it was incredible to get to see those.
Yeah. I mean, I got that sense as well, like that the sets were really cool. Like, too bad that MGM kind of dismantled them eventually, like many, many, many years ago, when they ran into also some financial troubles. I always loved the sets, to be honest, because they were very, very interesting to look at, very detailed. very good for redressing. I mean, we've recognized a couple of times where we're like, oh yeah, whatever. This set here on this planet is actually just the Stargate room with like a different set dressing slightly or stuff like that.
But it worked.
But it works. Yeah. I mean, if you didn't know what to look for, you did not realize that.
And what about the costumes? I thought some of the costumes were incredible.
Yes. I mean, at the beginning, they had a lot of weird headdresses, but eventually they got rid of those. Especially on the Goa'uld side, there were a lot of weird things on heads.
Yes.
Yeah. But exactly. I mean, also, well done. It just looked weird.
Right.
Yeah. One thing about the sets, and since, Ray, you were there, you can tell me if my perception is correct or wrong. It felt to me like the core sets were built very detailed. And part of that comes from you get the different camera angles, like in the Stargate room, where sometimes a shot is from the left side, other times it's from the right side, and you get the same thing in their little control room that's upstairs. And it just felt like they built that part of the set so that it was like all together. Like you actually did have to go upstairs to get to the part to look down into where the Stargate is.
It was physically as you saw it in the show. Mm-hmm. It was above the Stargate room. You could go up there, look out that window and whatnot. Yeah. No, it was arranged the way you saw it in the show.
Yeah.
And you did have to go upstairs to get to it and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, that makes it so much more interesting also for the actors. Like you really get a sense of a place if you don't have to pretend you're upstairs.
Yeah. And the office was just off from that.
Mm-hmm.
The table where they sat around. Yeah.
It just was up there.
The exposition room.
We call it the exposition room.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And Hammond's office was right off that. Right?
So. Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, super interesting. There's so many interesting. I mean, so far even so many really cool and interesting sets. I mean, the whole Tok'ra sets with like the, I mean, supposedly like what was it? Crystals, I think. Crystal shapes on the wall. I mean, that was super detailed. Like just to make that look like actual crystals and like all of that.
I have to admit, I remember in the Stargate room where the Stargate itself is, there's two big looking machine guns.
Yes. Yes.
And if you get real close to those, you find out they're made of wood.
Okay, that's good to know. Yeah. There's actually, I think, quite early on a really fun cameo of now I'm blanking. the director.
Peter DeLuise.
Yeah. Where like, I mean, he liked to do cameos on screen, like where he would like be in the episode he's directing. He would like have some, oftentimes some role somewhere. There's one particular that like is related to those guns, because there's one where like, I think the kid walks through the Stargate and he's sitting at the gun and then he looks out and like, looks at the kid.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Yes.
And that was,
of course, he played a character in another series. He played Dogwood
In Deep in nicht Deep Space Nine. In not in Deep Space Nine. In Sequest DSV.
Sequest. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sequest.
Yeah. Oh wow! I forgot about that.
Yeah, Dagwood.
Show.
Yeah.
Dagwood. Yeah, that was him. Yeah. He was an android or something like that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, he did some acting as well as directing.
He did. Know? He did. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's also the funny one with his dad, like where like we get that I don't remember what the scene actually was about, but like basically they're switching.
Yeah, people. The scene where Dom is trying to make everyone like him.
Yeah.
And he says, "Well, maybe you'd like a younger me." And boom. Yeah. And it's Peter DeLuise.
Yeah.
And but didn't Peter direct that episode also?
He did.
I think so.
I can only imagine being on set with Peter directing and Dom acting. And basically, they just have to let the cameras roll.
Yes, they did.
And then figure out how to splice that together into
into the rest of the episode.
Yeah, that's exactly how that happened. Like they basically, there was barely a script at all, and it was basically just run the cameras and just see what happens, and Dom would just make it up basically. that was funny. Maybe going back to the characters, there's one other actor and one other character that I'm interested in, if you ever met her, Terrell Rothery, the Doc Fraser.
Another very nice person. Don really liked her.
Yeah.
And stuff.
They had really good chemistry together.
Yeah, they did.
She's one of our favorites on the show. Like we're always happy to see her when she's on.
I'm glad to hear you say that she was a very nice person.
Yes,
she was very nice on set.
Yeah,
I didn't spend a lot of time visiting with her, but I met her and she was always nice to me. And hey, Ray, you're here today. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just something I was kind of curious about. Who else do you remember, like that you acted with or have interesting stories about?
You know, I don't remember the names, but the people I spent the most time with were the sound techs and the director of photography I wish I could call all their names, but I'm terrible on names. But those are the people that. You know, I was sitting right over their shoulder, watching the levels on the audio equipment, watching the boom mic guy, asking him questions about how he placed it and stuff like that. I was very, very interested in the technical aspect of making the production. And so those are the people
to watch.
You know, those are the people that I spent the most time visiting with and asking questions and what it was like. I know that they all told me they had long days on the set.
I'm sure.
There was one story that I told Jeff a couple of weeks ago, I think, or the other week. The episode that actually it's only a couple of weeks ago. The episode that Michael Shanks directed. Longer than usual, very, very long nights, like not a lot of sleep. I mean, if you're directing and he had a small role in that episode, like not a lot, like he dies pretty, like, or his robot copy dies pretty early on and the human Daniel is off somewhere else. So kind of convenient for him. But Christopher Judge called him early in the morning. Like very, very early in the morning, like after probably like 3 hours of sleep or something, and convinced him that he had missed half a day of work, basically.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So prankster that he is. Yeah. I just looked up the DPs. There's only a couple here. Jim Mannert, Peter F. Wurste, which is, I remember him. I think he's a German guy, actually. Andrew Wilson, Chris McMullen, Tim Atkins, and Gordon Verhoeyle.
Mm-hmm.
Gord Verhoeyle, yeah. So,
I'm terrible on names, but I met all of these people and and spent time with looking over their shoulders. Mm-hmm. And they were really, really outgoing, friendly. And answered all my questions.
Canadian, right?
I kept my mouth shut at the right times.
So, yeah, that's why you were allowed back on set. Like, because
that's
that is
correct.
Important.
I was a well-behaved spy on the set.
So, any other stories you just come to mind? Like, just
let me think. I remember one slightly funny thing. They broke for lunch, and they had wonderful catering services on location. And we went out. They had the by the way, all of the dressing rooms were these movable trailers. You know, that was referred to as the circus. And then there was the craft truck and the people, and they had wonderful food. And I'll never forget, I followed Don out and he said, here, come with me. We're going to eat. And I walked up to the craft truck and I think it was Don's agent showed up, you know, that negotiate, you know, the hard-nosed negotiator or something.
Yeah.
To make a long story short, I got invited to eat at the truck and he didn't. one of the producers says, you can eat over there. Or I can't remember, but, you know, anyway, I got a bang out of it. I got better treatment than the agent.
Okay, that's funny. And somehow not surprising.
Not surprising,
yeah,
no.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't want anything, so that's probably why.
That's right. I wasn't, you know, negotiating salaries or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, but Don was well cared for in that series. I remember that he was on in that series, I think, 7 years. And I know towards the end, he was getting about $22,000. Dollars per episode.
Per episode, you know? Yeah. I mean, so for and he was in most episodes.
You can
episodes,
make ends meet so. On that.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, he was in most episodes.
If you can't, you need to seek help.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. That's right.
Okay. So I'm going to dive into a little bit more of the technical stuff.
Sure.
Was there anything that stood out for you in what you were seeing from the behind the cameras as like, wow, that's a really cool way they're doing this, whatever that might have been?
Yeah. The main thing that stuck in my mind was how long it took to set lights and stuff and how they had to change the lighting between each set. I mean, every time the camera moved, the lighting had to move. And change. And then the other thing that I thought was interesting is oftentimes on the close-ups, the other actors would deliver their lines from behind the camera.
Yeah.
But they still deliver their lines so that the correct reactions. And, you know, sometimes on the close-ups, the person being filmed, all they were doing was reacting. They weren't saying any lines at all. But the editor had the choice of picking out that reaction or whatever, or going to a cover shot or what have you. But I certainly noticed how long it took to change setups between each shoot.
Yeah.
And
you know, I've heard these days it's easier with like LED lighting, whatever, they can do like, do it faster.
I'm sure they didn't have that. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like you don't have that problem of like space and heat. So.
Other than that, it was pretty much as you would imagine it to be as far as the equipment and whatnot. The other thing that I certainly was aware of, I mean, they're on set, they're capturing all the sound with a boom mic, you know, a handheld boom mic. And Don would often be called in to do voiceovers.
Yeah, ADR.
You know, and to get the audio better and stuff. So they had a studio where he could see the scene, see his movements and everything, and then lip sync with it, and but have a microphone right in front of him. Also, I remember, this is a small technical detail, but those are the things that stick with you. The boom mic operator would, before each shoot, would turn on the mic and record the ambient sound of the room.
Yes.
And so that they could put it in so that there was no shift in that ambient sound when going from scene to scene or take to take, because the boom mic would often be in different locations and the room sound would be different. But I thought it was interesting that they just, while the room was silent, quote, and of course it wasn't silent, you know, there is this room echo or sound, and he would record that at the beginning of every shot.
Yeah. Yeah, probably so they take it good later on, train algorithms to remove the background noise and so on. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but and if you need to add in silence somewhere, it needs to sound right. Yeah, I've done a couple recording things where when we started, we all just had to sit there silently Uh-huh. And then wait until they said, okay, now we can start, so that they would have the ambient sound.
Super interesting.
There are a lot of little things like that that I picked up on that I wasn't aware of, you know, until you're on set and see them do these things.
Mm-hmm. So when you were on set, as long as I'm nerding out on the tech part here, did you get to see them do any of the setups for, and then actual usage for practical effects?
Oh, and good question.
I know sometimes they would, Patrice has told me, they would do some things where, like the light from the Stargate when it was on, reflecting off of people, or you'd have some other lighting that was happening, and instead of doing it in post, they actually did it practical on set.
I mean, they had a lot of the props were practical, like, for example.
True.
Yes. But there was no water in the Stargate room.
No. No.
You know,
that is CGI.
And it was just a stone or a brick wall behind the opening in the Stargate.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always filled in post.
Yeah.
And whatnot. Yeah. But no, you're right. Wherever they could. And they did arrange the lighting so that, you know, the light appeared, but a lot of it was put in post. I'm thinking about when they would walk up and walk into the Stargate.
That was usually flash or something.
Post.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That was not done on set. Mm-hmm. I do remember that.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, there were like. There were a bunch of episodes. I mean, one of the last episodes we watched got even an award for the set design and especially for the lighting. Like the light was actually the episode title, and that was mostly done practically. Like there was very little CGI. I mean, if I also remember, that was like late 90s. It's not that there was no, or early 2000s. There was no CGI, but it was harder and more expensive to do that, and on a show's budget it was sometimes, I think, easier to just do practical.
Sure. Yeah. No, there was a fair bit of CGI. I never went to the facility where they did the post. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to. Mm-hmm. But I never I never saw that because Don wasn't there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Did you see any of the practical effects, or does anything stick in your mind, or you're like, oh, I saw that?
I off the top of my head, I don't, it's been too long ago.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it's been somewhere between 20 and 30 years, so yes.
Exactly.
Been a while.
Exactly.
Yeah, and considering so much of it is set, take, reset, take, reset, take.
Yeah.
It would be very easy, I think, for a practical effect that's happening in that to just get lost in the tedium.
Yeah.
Yes. You have to enjoy it and enjoy going there and going back, you have to enjoy the technical side of it be interested in what they're doing and how they're doing it and so forth. Because it's not like going and watching an episode. Because you're only going to see us in a day. If you're there 4 or 5 hours, which was typical of how long I was there, you're only going to see a fragment of the episode, you know, and you don't know what came before or after, you know. I didn't, you know, walking in out of the blue, you know, and but I was always interested in, you know, and interested in the people on set. They were, like I say, they were always very nice to me and would visit, whatnot.
Yeah,
that's nice. And it did seem like, from what I have experienced so far, like this was a set where everyone really got along, and there really wasn't behind the camera drama happening like you hear about on other shows. It was mostly a group of people that got along. They showed up and they did their jobs.
And they did get together socially off, you know, at each other's homes and stuff. I know that, saw it happen. And so they liked each other, is what I'm saying, you know.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, that is that a show doesn't work long term, especially, I mean, 10 seasons plus movies and so on, if there's not some level of chemistry. Like, you don't have to be best friends, but it has to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, there has to be some kind of good chemistry happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, I'm losing myself in my own mind right now. There's so many questions I still want to ask. we're getting close to like the end, I think.
All right, episode. I'm going to ask the obvious question.
Okay, go for it.
Does the Stargate prop in person look as realistic as it does when we see it in an episode?
In the episode, it looks it looks slightly enhanced. It doesn't look quite as I don't know what adjective I want to add to it, but it looks very real and everything. But if you get up close to it, you can see how it's made and what it's made of and so forth, you know. And of course, when it's animated and goes into motion in the series, you know, you don't see that in when you're on, it doesn't do that on the set. Sorry.
I'm sure that'll be a letdown for some people to hear that.
Yeah.
But if you had told me no, that it actually spins, I would have been really surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, that just seems like a lot to put into a prop like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's and then you say that, and then they built the weird, the armbands that would open and close and all of that. And you're like, why? Like that makes no sense.
Yeah. But you know, if you've ever been in theater, it makes sense because you get people that they'll suddenly get so fixated on the one prop.
Yeah. And making it as real as possible and everything. Yes.
And everyone's like, no one's going to be able to tell.
Yeah.
Just put it together with tape and I don't know, bubble wrap. Paint it. It's fine.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. So, I mean, related question that do the hallways look as real, like when you're there, than they?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and the hallways are you go right from one set into another. Mm-hmm. The hallways, they do look. You know, they're very much like what appears in the scene. There's occasionally you'll go around a corner and suddenly here's a brick wall or something that, you know, but. But all the tunnels and everything are there and real and look real, and the conduits on the walls and everything, they're there. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, that's very, very frequently something that like, I mean, the hallways are only very short or something because, like, we need this much of hallway and we'll just redress it for every set, for every scene we need. But I didn't get that sense from Stargate that they look different enough, like when you're walking around.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, okay, if you're going to another level, it's the same scene as the same set, just with a different number, and it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But because you don't need to build the whole facility.
No, but there were lots of hallways and dressed as they were in the actual episodes.
Okay, well, I mean, it does appear as if it's a very intricate set overall because of all the hallways and stuff.
Yeah.
And I assumed it was just like a small set of like hallway that, you know, it has like a couple cross entry areas and a dead end at one point. And you just change your camera angles and what you're putting on the set and you just do the halls in this one little thing. But that's cool to know that it's actually much more involved and the hallway system is much more detailed.
Yeah, but I mean, it kind of makes sense if you think about it. We have a lot of hallway walk and talks where they just like, I don't know, Donis Davis actually quite a lot where someone else is walking through the hallway and they're talking, and that's one shot. So like, I mean, you need some corridors and hallways, whatever. And then there was the one where Richard Dean Anderson like took a bike and just drove around. Biked around, like rode around the hallways and the gate room and whatever. So there must be enough hallway to do that.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And there were.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was visualizing something more like from various Star Trek series where they had the luxury of saying, well, it's a curved spaceship. You know, it's a big disc.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they would have these curved hallways that had some side chutes off of them.
Yeah.
And so you could have just a hallway set. And depending on the angle you were shooting from, it looks like a completely different area.
Yeah. Yeah. And then big mirrors at the end where you can basically, it looks like the hallway is going on.
Yeah. Yeah. whatever it takes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. For me, the final question is, did you ever go off world?
No, all of the times that I visited the Stargate set, I was visiting primarily the Stargate room there and the halls in it and Don's office and, you know, that area. Because of I was located 5 blocks from the Dominion, the Bridge Studios. So,
I mean, the real answer would have been yes, because you live in Vancouver and all the planets are around you.
So, I assume that you said no because that's actually classified information.
Exactly.
And so we'll just
if I told you I'd have you know
the Men in Black would show up and
That actually brings me to another thing. They had military advisors like on set. I don't know if you ever met any of them, but I know there were some actual military people there sometimes. They even had some roles for them, like smaller roles here and there.
I did not. Let me put it this way. If they were there, I mean, there were lots of people around the set. I didn't know that's why they were there. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. But of course, had a real military person in Dawn.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he was an officer in the U.S., you know.
In the U.S. Army,
Army. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Interesting. No, it's just something because, I mean, like, I'm expecting that they were not, like, there in uniform and everything. It's probably just, like, plain clothing and whatever, and they're just advising here or there. But, yeah, I was just interested because that's one aspect that you don't see on screen usually.
Right. And those people might not have been on set. They might have been in the script. You know, when they were going through the script and writing the script, because there's an awful lot of this production that isn't done on set. And that's why they have multiple directors, is a director starts out working the script, working with stuff, then the shoots, then the post, then the special effects, you know, and the director follows all that through. Mm-hmm. So it's a pipeline of stuff that is happening. And, the thing I was most interested in was the things that were happening on set.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And the sets were close by where I worked, and it was easy for me to go over there. So.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't spend every day, every hour there.
I had to work at my own company as well.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That pesky paycheck that you need.
Work always getting in the way.
Yeah,
exactly. You always. Have the fun. Did you ever consider working there? I mean, you had the connections, you were there, like.
No, I let me put it this way. I was very happy in what I was doing. At the time I was doing that, I was doing color science for Creo. We were doing very high-end proofing systems for the printing industry, laser imaging systems, and I was working with the color scientists of the people who made the material that we imaged, namely Kodak, Fuji, DuPont, and animation. And so I was in my element doing color science at the time, and enjoying every minute of it.
Yeah, I can imagine that. That's just,
I mean, but it was always nice to, for a break, to sneak off and see what was happening on the Stargate set.
See what Don is up to today.
Exactly.
What planet is he invading today? No, I don't know.
Exactly.
Again, classified, Patrice.
Yeah, you're right. I forgot about that. I think I'm out of questions for today. I would say there's probably about a million stories, but maybe we'll have to have you back and ask you more. Also, when Jeff knows a little bit more what's going on.
That's fair. Yeah. Regardless, Ray, you're just absolutely wonderful.
Yes.
And and I'm willing to just make the commitment right now and say you are welcome back.
Yes, anytime. If you ever want to watch an episode, let us know. Like,
we haven't touched on my flying or anything.
Yeah, that's true.
I was always hoping that they would write an episode that involved aircraft or whatever.
They did.
You know,
they did. There were a couple, but.
That involved gliders or something. And
because
Don, of course, the first time he took me on the set, he told them all my background and what I did and all that. Yeah.
They did have gliders. They were just deaf gliders.
I did do work in other productions.
Interesting.
Other than Stargate. If you saw Tomorrowland, the Disney production Tomorrowland.
Yes, I did.
There's a young lady who flies a model helicopter in the thing. I was flying the helicopter in that movie.
Okay, that's very cool.
Yeah.
So, great. I've seen your work.
You have. The other big claim to fame, my 5 seconds of fame, is I flew a glider in a Cadillac commercial that played at the halftime of the Super Bowl.
Wow.
And my face appears for five seconds in the rear cockpit of the glider.
I have to look that up.
Yeah.
That's super interesting.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I mean, I also know from, because we've talked about it, that you've done like commercial drone work, for example.
For
productions. So.
Right. Yeah, I've flown model airplanes in a commercial. I've flown model helicopters, and I've flown drones.
Yeah.
And.
Yeah.
So.
So there's a lot. I mean, you're in the Vancouver area, so like.
Exactly.
It's almost in the backyard.
This is Hollywood North.
It is, yeah. I mean, alternatively, sometimes it's New York, but.
Yes, that's true. It's wherever you want it to be.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. There's in another sci-fi show that like Continuum, there's a joke in that where they someone walks outside and it's like, looks almost like New York. And they're, of course, in somewhere downtown Vancouver.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's one of the things that that I routinely point out as, wow, this is completely wrong. when they do the outdoor shots for Colorado Springs and you see the buildings, or like when a recent episode that we watched, they went to the Air Force Academy, so Colorado Springs. And I live in Colorado and I have spent a lot of time in Colorado Springs. I know none of that is Colorado Springs. It is so obvious.
I
would be willing to bet that was Simon Fraser University, because it's all concrete.
It was.
Yeah.
A lot of government buildings was always Simon Fraser University.
Yes. Yeah. It's a very popular place to shoot.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, and it's obvious that they've used that.
What was the other one? International Plaza or something like that? Or I always forget.
There's another one from the Expo 86 days.
Buildings.
Yeah,
that's the other one that they like to go.
And I worked in a building, Discovery Park, where they often shot stuff, and that's where I I almost ran smack into Richard Dean Anderson when he was doing MacGyver. He was directing that day, and he came out the front door as I went in, and we practically went nose to nose. And they also shot Airwolf.
Oh, Airwolf.
And they landed a helicopter. Okay. They landed a helicopter in front of the building and stuff. Yeah. And, wow. Yeah. Oh, there's shoots going on around Vancouver all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially these days, like more and more seems to be in the Vancouver area.
Yeah. Yeah.
Spoiler, there are not shots going on around Colorado Springs all the time. No.
No. And I'm disappointed. I always thought, you know, Stargate is actually a documentary, but don't tell anybody.
That's what they want you to think.
Yeah. Ray, it was such a pleasure to have you here. So many cool stories. Also great to have you on our special 100th episode. As I said,
yes.
Come back anytime. Like we're I think just getting started almost, because it's only been 4 seasons. So there's another couple of years we're going to watch, and there's some, I mean, I know it, and you probably, because you've seen some really cool episodes that are still coming that Jeff has no clue about. I've hinted at it and been like,
I'm looking forward to them.
I'm usually Jeff. I don't tell Jeff barely anything about what's going to happen unless it's something where I'm like, okay, I'll forget when we get to that. So I'll tell you now. Like, I don't know, some character doesn't come back, and I'll tell him that. I mean, like, okay, it doesn't come back. Because I would never, it would never come up, right? But usually I don't tell Jeff spoilers so that he can enjoy it for the first time. But yeah, there's so many episodes, so feel free. If you're ever into the, like, in the mood, and you are like, hey, I want to watch an episode of Stargate and then talk to the guys, let us know. So,
that'll be great.
That will be really cool. Right, we usually at the end of the episode let people know where they can find out more about things we're doing. So I'll start with you this time. Not on Twitch anymore, right? But anything
you want to mention? I'm not on Twitch anymore. I very occasionally will be a guest on MacBreak Weekly, but it's rare these days. When the Vision Pro came out, I was a guest, having one of the first ones and stuff. Yeah. But I'm fully retired now, and really not promoting anything at this time. I'm still just flying my gliders and enjoying that. And I am, the other technical thing I'm doing, I'm into shooting and learning post-production for high dynamic range video and still images.
Oh, nice. Interesting.
I have a high dynamic range monitor in front of me, two of them, and stuff. Yeah. And so that's, you know, that's my setup for all of that.
Yeah.
And I Very cool. shoot high dynamic range video and stuff. That's my techie thing right now.
Yeah. And that's of course, cool. And of course, in space and the pilot.
Oh, yeah. Maybe hang Absolutely. Out talk hang about out in space. Yeah. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Jeff, how about you? Tons of stuff, I know.
There's so many things. All right. Well, as everyone knows, I revived my two different blogs, jeffgamet.com and freshbrewtales.com. Uh-huh. And Ray, I don't know, you may enjoy either or none, but Fresh Brewed Tales, that's where I talk about the things that I see people do in coffee shops.
Yeah, I just went through your history, because it's been a while that I've read all of them, and they're just all funny. It's
like and Ray, 9 years later thing or something. The crazy thing is all the stuff that I have on that blog, it's true. I have witnessed all of it.
Yeah.
And anyhow, so there's the blogs, then Jay Gamet on the various social medias. Active mostly right now on Mastodon, PixelFed, and Blue Sky. And then, as always, I'll pick just two shows to highlight. Just. So, how about The Context Machine, the show that I do with Brant Chaffin, and In Touch with iOS, Dave Ginsberg's show about everything that's iOS, well, at this point, Apple-related.
Mm-hmm. At this point, it's Apple-related.
And Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, everything I'm doing, social media links, podcasts, projects, cool things list, like all the cool things I've picked on various shows over the years, all of that on my website, thepatrice.com. That's where you get there. Yeah, I'm also doing a bunch of podcasts, but it's kind of random. I'm freeing up some spots right now, so it will be probably new podcasts because that's what I do.
Because nature and podcasts abhor a vacuum.
Yes, exactly. You can find us as a podcast on social media. There is Mastodon. We're at RetroRewatch at techhangout.social. There's also Blue Sky, RetroRewatch.com. And if you just want to send us an email, hello@RetroRewatch.com is the easiest way to just send us an email. If you have stories to tell, if you have questions for Ray, anything like that, just shoot us a message and we'll talk about it. And with that, once again, Ray, great pleasure, a lot of good stuff, good conversations, good stories. Really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
That was fun. And yeah, with that, I don't know what we're going to do for the next episode. I think Jeff and I have to make a decision. Are we going to jump into Stargate or are we going to watch something else? Because we do other shows, some of them sci-fi, some of them not. Mm-hmm. We just, last episode did Chuck. So that was fun. So we'll have to decide. Are we gonna prolong the season break, or is Jeff so excited to see what happens in season 5 that we're gonna jump in? So
we still have to do predictions. We still have to do predictions. We jump into the season. So yes. There's at least that.
So stay tuned and see what we'll do next time. Until then, see you soon. Bye bye.